774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Now, just before I was speaking with Volker Wiedemann about an Austrian dictator burning books, and I was reading an article in the newspaper last week about another Austrian. His name is Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's the governor of California, in case you have missed that. And he has decreed that from August, school children will access Californian school children, not all school children around the world. He doesn't have that power yet. He has decreed that from August, Californian school children will access their maths and science reference materials online. There will be no more maths and science textbooks. He's also suggested that handheld reading devices that can store hundreds of books may beckon in the future. Now, the old fogey in me, and the old fogey fueled by, you know, being raised by a father who was self-taught by books, immediately, you know, I was aroused by this. You know, no more books in schools. Now, you know, I don't wish to be alarmist, but what's next? Full frontal nudity at assembly, the end of the world as we know it. Yeah, okay, yeah, I might be taking it a bit far, but to give some actually informed comment on Big Arnie's decision, because I'm very interested in all this stuff, I have with me noted futurist and regular contributor to the Sunday program, Morris Mizalowski. Morris, how are you?
Yeah, danke schön.
Thanks for coming in.
A pleasure as always.
Arnie has, you know, has issued a fiat banning maths and science textbooks. I see this as the first step towards the end of the world. How do you, as a futurist and a person who I know is interested in the future of education, how do you see this?
Well, it's typical Schwarzenegger stuff, isn't it? I don't think it's the end of the world for books at all. I think it's an evolution that we're going to go down. I think his decree's a bit ridiculous, though.
Yeah.
His timing's a bit ridiculous, and the way that he's gone about it I don't think will work to his favour. But the notion of books, electronic books, is certainly something we have to grapple with into the, you know, next decade or so.
Because just outright ban, I mean, has he given extra resources, do you know, to make sure that these maths and science resources can be online, or has he just gone, people will work it out for themselves?
Why would he want to do that?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
why give education more money?
Exactly. I mean, in fact, this was done for the exact opposite. What he's done is taken $350 million out of education by doing this, he claims. Because the Californian government, as I believe many of them in the states, actually subsidizes textbooks for a number of students.
Yeah.
And his maths tells him that he's spending $350 million a year on maths and science books alone.
Mm.
And one of the ways he can solve his ever-increasing black hole deficit is to take the books away from the children. I mean, it's a natural progression, you've got to admit.
Yeah, that's true, because that's when I want to save money, I take books away from children.
Absolutely.
It always works.
If all else fails, take books away.
And they don't get cranky at all, because they don't know anything.
Exactly.
Because they're not reading.
Well, this is true.
Do you think this is the beginning of a movement to get rid of textbooks entirely and put everything in schools online?
I think eventually we're going to see that, but eventually I think it's 10 or 15 years away. Pearson, who is one of the largest textbook manufacturers or producers in the world, has certainly been working down this road for a little while, and in some cases it makes sense. It really plays into what children now learn, how they learn. They're very much into their gadgets and their games. It's an environment that they're comfortable with. You and I still like the old paperback, I must say.
Yeah.
I like the feel of the book. There's nothing better than actually turning the page and earmarking them. But, you know, it's something perhaps that the new generation isn't as familiar with. But it is where they're going. So Pearson's has been working for a while on trying to put books electronically into the classroom. It makes some sense because it stops disenfranchisement. It's actually quite a cheap thing to do. So whereas a textbook's $100, I mean, it might be $75 to $100. I was an old academic 15 years in university lecture halls, and my students were paying $75 plus for a textbook.
Yeah.
Now they might only pay $5 or $10 for a textbook on a disc. It also means that thing is lighter. They can take it home. They can take it with them. They should be doing that anyway with a hard copy, but they're not as likely to. They might leave it in their locker.
Mm.
So there are some reasons for it. My main reason really is, one, that they're used to it. So it's an environment they're used to, like their PS3 and their game, so they're quite comfortable thumbing through it. But to me, it's the notion that it can be updated constantly.
Yeah.
One of the difficulties with books, as much as I enjoy them and love them, is that they're out of date. When I grew up, Encyclopedia Britannica was it. I mean, it was the thing that you really went to do all of your assignments. But you waited once a year for the update to come. And you had the 1988 book, and that was it. And by the time you got it, it was already late.
true. And if an African country had changed names three times that year,
absolutely,
not all of the names were going to be in the Encyclopaedia Britannica.
And it took you 2 years to do that. So the World Book was the same, and we shouldn't pick on Britannica, but whatever it was, they were all the same. And that was because it was the best we can do. Now we can update in real time. So Schwarzenegger said that the book has a six-year cycle. That it takes about 6 years for a book to be updated, a maths or a science book. And what he's claiming is now they can literally update it within seconds. So if something happens in the world, they're getting a fresh, insightful look at what that is in real time. So that side of it's great. Going back to Schwarzenegger, though, it really doesn't make much sense, because I don't know how he's going to solve his deficit problem with it. He's only picked on maths and science. I don't know about you, but I don't see how maths updates itself all that regularly that it needs a book, because one of his main premises is this, that the book updates itself regularly.
Yeah.
I don't think maths book needs updating that much.
Yeah, I mean, maths seems to relatively stay the same until you get into the higher echelons, you know, Fermi's Last Theorem and stuff like that.
Yes.
And school kids don't need that updated.
Well, I certainly do, that's for sure. I could quite happily live without it.
Can I? Books might be a sort of misleading term in a way, mightn't it? Because if we're starting to look at this stuff online, I know from, you know, my nephew and kids his age that because they've played video games and they've got their resources in a non-linear way for such a long time, they're not just about starting at the top and finishing at the bottom. So the online resources will be able to reflect that more, won't they? It'll be sort of a non-linear way of learning in the same way that the, you know, hypertext and then onto the internet is.
And that's a perfect way of describing it. They're talking now about flex books instead of textbooks. Flex, F-E-L-E-X, flex books. Because for that notion, that what we really need is a book that does update itself, that is live, that is interactive, that gives a student not only the opportunity to read, but to engage with the material. So you can imagine if a student can read something, as they may or may not want to, but all of a sudden see a video on it, and then be able to jump across and have a discussion about that. So if they're learning French, perhaps, you know, they could learn something about France, they could see a video of France or somewhere there, and then maybe go across and have a chat to somebody in France and practice their French. That's the kind of books that I'm hoping we're going to see into the future, which you're right, is not a book, but it's still a mode of learning.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to head eventually, not baby with bathwater stuff. I mean, this again, his stuff, I think, is just too much too soon.
Now, one of the things he... firstly, you know, book publishers, you said that Pearson's are on board with this. Are other book publishers similarly inclined, or are many of them going, no, you're killing our books, what are we going to do?
No, look, they all seem to have realised the elephant in the room, and they're all working towards it. Again, nobody that I can tell has a great hurry for this. It's not as if it has to happen tomorrow, but a lot of the authors, a lot of the material is now being devised for online stuff as well. And really, they're talking about making it broader than the books, the things we talked about. So what they're really doing is saying, look, the book in itself is a great institution and certainly has its place, but really we need online learning materials, and that's where many of them are headed, producing that. Pearson's actually had a really good idea 2 years ago, which hasn't yet taken off, and that is giving people free textbooks. And I'm sorry that, you know, Schwarzenegger didn't pick up on this notion, and that was by putting advertising into the textbooks. And what they were looking at doing was getting, I mean, not to pick on Maccas, and it wasn't them, but to get a corporate to actually sponsor a textbook and to have a couple of pages of ads. I don't find that to be so offensive. I know we've had the discussion before in the broader community about whether that was good or not. But you know what? If my children have to see a page or two of sponsorship that they can flick through really easily and not really pay much attention to and get a free textbook, I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah.
Especially when they're burdened. I mean, many of us are burdened by having to put textbooks in the hands of our children. So I think that was a much better way to approach it. Let's get corporate involved, not just in sponsoring this, but corporate involved in education as well, to an extent. And I understand that there are boundaries, and I accept and respect those, and we need to work with them. But, you know, that's where our children are headed anyway, into corporate land, into the big land when they finish school. I think we need to start blending that.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, this. You're listening to me, Alan Brough, on 774 AC Melbourne and ABC Victoria, and I'm speaking about Arnold Schwarzenegger putting all the maths and science texts for Californian students online, and I'm speaking with Maurice Mizalowski, who's a business futurist, about that. The whole idea of being, my hackles just raise immediately when someone said there's going to be adverts in a textbook. Mm. I suppose the argument for it would be that if you're aware of that happening, you can educate your children about the reason that those ads are in there and maybe cut down on. But is it the thin edge of the wedge when you start to have adverts in textbooks? Soon, you know, they're going to be the colour of, you know, corporate colours and all that sort of stuff, and surely there has to be a line that can't be crossed.
Absolutely. There always has to be a line. We have to use it for niceness, not evilness. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
So I'd certainly agree with that. I have no issue, and please, I'm not saying we have an ad on every page.
But it is an interesting idea.
The no notion is that if we have finite resources, if we really are struggling to educate our children, I think we are, and the reason we are mostly is because of dollars, we really have to look at another way of doing it, because education is just absolutely vital. I mean, there's no two ways about it as far as I'm concerned. It is the most important thing we can do to anybody.
Yeah.
So we need to get that in our hands. If that's the issue, if funding is the issue, let's find a way around it. Maybe corporate's the way to go, or maybe there's another resource. But again, we're arguing about Schwarzenegger. I'm saying, you know, what he's doing, the end result may be good. I'm not all that thrilled about the way he's going about it. And our children are really good at looking through ads anyway. Remember that they're into the Facebooks, they're into the LinkedIn and the MySpaces. All of those carry ads now. And I can tell you, my kids ignore every single one of them. I mean, they do. They just look. They look to what they want to look at, and they're not going to be. You're not going to be drawn by these ads. And I would expect that if we go down that road, somebody sensitive is going to work out what ads are appropriate and what isn't, and what they can and can't say. And I would hope that this would be a small portion of it. In fact, I would, if I was involved, insist it would be a small portion of the actual text or book or site or whatever it was.
Yeah. Now, Schwarzenegger, apart from saying that all reference materials for science and maths are going to be online for California school children, he also said that handheld reading devices that can store hundreds of books may be beckoning in the future. Can you just explain a bit about these? I know nothing about these e-readers. Can you just explain a bit about the genesis of them and where they are now and what people can do with them?
Yeah, sure. So an e-book, they're now called, it's been around for a little while, about 10 or 15 years. For the first 10 years, they really didn't do much. It was hard to get a book on, it was hard to read, and didn't really make much sense. The last 5 years, they seem to have taken off in popularity in the States, not in Australia.
Mm.
And they took off in popularity in the States about 5 years ago because of a device called Kindle, K-I-N-D-L-E, and it was put out by Amazon, Amazon.com, the great bookseller. And what they wanted to do, obviously, was find a device so people would buy more books and do it. Now, Kindle came out in the States. It's kind of like an iPod size, a little bit bigger than an iPod, not much thicker and not much heavier. And in this device, or on this device, you can download books that you buy, and the books that you buy are around $9.99 for a book that you might pay $30 for in a hard or soft cover. So very reasonable, $9.99 download. And it's downloaded, obviously, onto your e-book, and you then have that for life. So it's yours, and you can read it in whatever way you want. The reader, the screen is quite clear. It's not very bright. It's quite clear. It's still black and white in many cases, although the new versions have some colour in it. And you can flip through it. So again, not that satisfaction of actually tactile holding of pages, but it is what it is. It has the look of a book. So it's actually laid out like a book, like a page.
Yeah.
And you flick through it if you want. And you flick through it really by just clicking on the side, and it'll make the page go to the next one.
Okay.
Although the new incarnations, and I saw one of them the other week, you can literally take your finger and just flip. So again, not different from the iPod or the iPhone. Yeah. So you can do that with that. So we're really not moving all that far anymore with technology. So you're getting that look and feel. The other thing that the Kindle does, and I talk about that because it's the most popular one in the States. In fact, when it first came out about 4 years ago, four and a half years ago, there was a waiting list. There was literally a waiting list for 3 months because they'd built about 350,000 of them and sold them out within the first 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it was the thing to have in the States at that time. You know, everybody had to have one, so there was a huge waiting list. They're still very, very popular. We're up to version 3, I think, now of the Kindle. The iPhone has a reader. Many of the new telephones, many of those new, you know, fancy phones have some kind of a reader in them. So we're certainly getting the basic architecture into our hands now, and we haven't had that before. That was one of the reasons it failed. So it's likely that down the track we are going to get more of them. What we're using it for, interestingly, is not just for novels, but for newspapers and for keeping up with blogs and materials, because in the States you can subscribe on the Kindle again. You can subscribe to a newspaper and it's downloaded to your Kindle whenever there's a new edition or new material on it. And you can read papers from around the world. Now, that's an interesting thing to do on a reader.
And much easier being in the tram and not having to try and fold a broadsheet newspaper into an eighth so you can read it without elbowing someone in the face.
This is true. Although, again, I think a couple of months ago I saw one of these devices actually folds out. It's e-paper, and it's the size of a telephone, normal telephone, and there was two of them. One actually pulls out like a scroll, so you can make it larger so you can actually read paper. Cool. I mean, again, not broadsheet, but I think it was triple the size of the screen. And the other one was literally a fold. You fold it in four, so it was this origami thing. And that's because they're working on this new e-paper, which is very, very thin. I mean, obviously, a new e-paper. And it literally just updates itself, so it looks like a piece of paper to all intents and purposes, but has this constant ability to rewrite itself.
Okay, that's totally the future, isn't it?
Totally the future about two or 3 years from now, maybe.
E-paper, you unfold it and it's got stuff on it.
Yes, and again, newspapers are working with this stuff, that they they can actually produce, like the Age or the Herald Sun, could actually produce a newspaper that has moving video on it. So when you watch it, like Harry Potter in the movie.
I was just going to say, that was exactly what I was thinking.
So like Harry Potter, you can actually see a section of it that comes to life. And again, that may be science fiction, but we're not that far away because the prototypes are here. It just has to go into production, do all that kind of stuff. So we might see it in the next 5 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. But these things are coming out there. So the notion, which is where we start from, the notion of e-books and reading on these types of devices is going to become more familiar to us as we move down the track. And that's why I'm saying 5 years plus, I think in the classrooms it's going to have to be an absolute, given that kids want that kind of thing, not so much the e-book, but that environment to play in, given that you and I might be more used to it by that stage, those two polarities might meet, and then we're going to say, well, this makes sense, let's find a way to do this properly, rather than this knee-jerk reaction of, let's say, $350 million in California's dying debt by taking it out of the hands of kids.
Yeah, I like taking money from kids. It's too easy.
It is.
Too easy.
Like taking candy from a child.
Exactly. Yeah. Like someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's kindergarten cop accepted. I'm speaking to Morris Mizalowski clearly about kindergarten cop and how that affects the future of Californian education. We're actually talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger saying that all science and math resources for California school kids are going to be online now. Now, we've talked about online resources, we've talked about the e-book. What other changes in education, let's say technology-wise, can you envisage in the next 5 to 10 years?
There's quite a lot, actually, and it's not really the next 5 or 10 years either. I mean, there's a lot happening out there, but there's a lot happening today too, which is really good. I'm working with a number of state schools and secondary schools and also tertiary institutions, and we're talking about new classrooms, new environments, and the classrooms are becoming very interactive in those specific models. So the students now have a curriculum that's set for them, like you and I did in class. In other words, we know what we want to do for the week and for the month. But in one of the cases especially, the students are given the curriculum on Monday morning, and in a much larger, freer environment, they're allowed then to develop that material themselves. Now, that's under strict supervision. There's normally, in the one I'm working with, there are three teachers in the room at any time. But what it means is, if you are somebody who likes to read, then you read the material and you absorb it. If you're somebody that likes to do things, again, we're talking about different learning styles, then you're actually able to make models of it, you're able to go online, make a video of it. You're able to use what you need to make the learning easy for you to engage with the material and then bring it back to the larger classroom. So it's the technologies around that I'm really getting excited about, where we're really keying in to the students' basic learning needs, which as teachers we know, but was difficult to address before because it was, as you said before, a very linear style of teaching. We can now go out there. So that's what I'm hoping we're going to see more and more of.
I love the sound of that. If that sort of thing had been around when I was at high school, particularly, I think that I wouldn't have been in the principal's office every day.
And nor would I, for the same reason that we need to be engaged. It's not a matter of being good, bad. It's just a matter of each of us learning differently. And we need to be able to key ourselves into that student and give them what they need to be able to grow.
Now, in the same way, I mean, I know in medical technology, they're now having basically doctors who can monitor 5 or 6 ICUs in different hospitals from one area and give real-time advice to people and things like that. Will we find teachers being able to communicate more directly with students because they're getting all this input? If a student's doing something online, the teacher can see it immediately and respond to it. So they will get more sort of, I mean, albeit through technology, but personal interaction with the students?
I think they will. Again, technology's a tool. We've got to put it into perspective. I mean, let's not go overboard. They're not, our children, if I have anything to do with it anyway, will not be taught by robots. But they will certainly, I mean, maybe they want to. Maybe some of our teachers felt like it. But they're being taught they're being given the tools of technology, and certainly teachers now have a better ability to be able to monitor them and do what they need to do, which is the pointy end stuff of being with them. But our students are also beginning to learn in virtual spaces. You know, you can go into something like a secondlife.com, which is a free space, so secondlife.com, and in there it's a virtual space, so it's a synthetic world. It's kind of like the real world digitized and put inside your computer screen.
Oh, yeah.
And
in that, I thought by synthetic world you meant the 1970s.
No. Well, it can be
made
if you
entirely
want.
Out of polyester.
Well, it can be if you want it to be. So it really is whatever you want it to be. But what's interesting is, and this is being used a lot now, is that you actually have universities in there. I mean, the big universities. So you have Cambridge in there, and you have Oxford, and you have, I think, Bond University's in there, and Melbourne Uni's in there. So the universities are in there, and they have virtual classrooms, virtual lecture halls. And the students come to those virtual lecture halls as avatars. Now, you and I roll our eyes, and we say, you know, this is something we don't understand. But to them, an avatar is the way they play their game. It's their character online. It's like their cartoon character. and using their keyboard and their mouse and the rest of it, which they're very agile at doing, they literally walk themselves, this character, into the classroom, and they sit there in front of this professor or this lecturer, and they engage as they would maybe in a real classroom.
Wow.
So it's a real-time event. There's somebody at the front of it who's there in a virtual sense, who's sitting in front of his or her computer leading this lecture, and the other people, the other students, are sitting behind them, again in avatars, in front of their computers and keyboards, and they're listening to the lecture and they're engaging with each other. It's a really interesting environment, and I know that there will be discussion about whether it's good or bad. It's different, and it has a different purpose, because for distance education, which is one of the things I'm doing with one of the universities in Melbourne, we're able actually to bring people in from around the world to do postgraduate studies, and we have people in America and people in England and people in Australia all sitting together in this virtual classroom learning from each other, and that couldn't happen easily in a physical environment. And we're able to show videos and talk about stuff, and it's a real proper curriculum set by the Australian Standards Framework. So it's not a Mickey Mouse, it's an absolute PhD type environment. And you can bring that down to the really simple environment where you can use it for kindergarten and prep kids and grade one kids, because they learn and engage themselves really well there. So that's the kind of thing I think we're going to see more and more of over the next 5 or 10 years.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. And I can imagine also for kids, you know, doing what used to be called correspondence learning when I was young. I mean, one of the problems was, and I knew this from talking to people, that you never really got to interact with people. So if you can interact in a virtual space, which, as you said, children are really comfortable doing, then it's probably going to make the learning easier and definitely much more exciting.
For many students it does, because it releases that barrier. You know, it just makes them, they are freer online, they're able to engage, as you said, and they lose themselves in it in the right sense. So as long as the environment's stimulating, they enjoy it and they love it, and they really do learn very, very well. You know, the basics that we're seeing are really being taught well. Students seem to engage, and that, again, I'm putting that back into the conversation, is not about taking the teacher out of the equation. It's giving the teacher an additional tool that he or she can use in the classroom.
Morris Mizulowski, I could keep on going talking about this all day, because I'm sure there's lots of other things. We'll get back to this at some point, because it's fascinating. Thank you very, very much for coming in again and having a chat on the show. It is always lovely to speak to you, and have a great Sunday.
And you. My pleasure as always. Have a great Sunday, everyone.
You are listening to me, Alan Brown, 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.